Next case the court will call him here is Kenneth Lee Barden in Commonwealth of Virginia. It's often you're spending the night with us, huh?
Guys, you've been so warm and hospitable to me, I figured it's worthwhile. And, you know, the state only pays mileage. So it was easier to send one than to send three.
Well, that's something that you would not find any disagreement with from this court.
Good morning, Your Honor. On behalf of Mr. Barden, we respectfully request this court vacate his conviction for the violation of Section 46.2-301 because the evidence in this case failed to establish that at the time Mr. Barden was driving his vehicle, his license was still suspended or revoked. At this time, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Yes, ma'am.
The question before the court is, when does a suspension or a revocation terminate for purposes of being criminally liable under Section 46.2-301? In this particular case, Mr. Barden's license had been both suspended for failing to pay fines and costs and revoked for two DUI convictions. But at the time of his stop in November, he had paid off all his fines and costs, and he had completed all his periods of revocation. What he had not done, however, is gone to the Department of Motor Vehicles and sought reinstatement or had his privileges reinstated. I suggest to the court in this particular case, the provisions of 46.2-301 were not violated by Mr. Barden's conduct.
And Ms. Hoffman, I appreciate that you're on this case because you always do a very good job when you make your arguments before the court. And this is an interesting case, and it seems to me from looking at all of the analysis here is that there's a little bit of imprecision used in what's going on in these situations. When a person's license is suspended, I always thought of it in terms of going down and getting your license reinstated. In other words, you had a license and now you're going back to get the license that you had, so you're going to reinstate it. When your license is revoked, it's a little bit different that you're not basically going back for reinstatement, you're going back on a reapplication because you don't have a license.
And it's just the court's definition of both is correct. That's how we define a suspension versus a revocation. But what's at issue in the criminal case, which is different than the resumption of driving. And that's the distinction. When we look at 301, which is a criminal statute, which is different than the provisions of 46.2-411, which is what the Commonwealth has relied on to support what is the status for reapplication or regaining privileges. Under 301 specifically, a person whose license has been suspended or revoked shall not thereafter drive until one of three different things happens. Either the person's the period of suspension or revocation is terminated, or the privilege has been reinstated. There's a third option for a restricted license, which doesn't apply in this particular case. And so by its very definition, the criminal statute separates the expiration of a suspension or revocation period from the process of reinstatement. The difference between a suspension in which I reinstate, in essence, I pick up wherever I was in my licensing. That's the same reason why if your license had expired, you simply can't have it reinstated. When my suspension ends, I simply resume where I was. I was in year one, year three, year five, my license is in that status. Whereas somebody who's had it revoked has to actually go through the process of reapplying. They have to retake the driving test. They have to retake the vision test. They have to, again, re-obtain their license. But in both instances, there is a termination of that period. And when we look at the definition for both suspension and revocation, defined by the code section, they both use the same type of language, which is whether it be to get it reinstated after suspension or through reapplication, they both use the same thing. Following the period of suspension, one may seek reinstatement. After the expiration of the period of revocation, one can then reapply for a license. So there's a distinction. There's a period that ends. It has a termination, after which the way in which I regain license is different for suspension.
Well, one of the revocation. And the code provisions that we deal with in looking at these things, neither counsel, and I'm not blaming either counsel, but there was no citation of 46.2-412. And I'll read it, and I have a copy for counsel. Mr. Short, if you could pass it up so they could have reference to it. 46.2-412 says specifically, every suspension or revocation shall remain in effect, and the Commonwealth shall not issue any new or renewal license or register in his name any motor vehicle until permitted under the provisions of this chapter. Doesn't that seem to suggest that the revocation is a revocation until the steps are taken to?
I'd suggest not. And again, what I distinguish for the court is this. There's a difference between the issuance of a new license, mm-hmm. and the criminal act of driving when your license is in the status of being suspended or revoked. And it's very similar to what we see when we look at the habitual offender statutes. And if we look at that same language, this court, the appellate courts have addressed, when they address the issue of somebody who is driving after being declared a habitual offender, mm-hmm. the court has distinguished between an individual's process to regain his license, which requires court order, and the process of still being a habitual offender. And we see that when we look at there are two sort of key cases on the issue. One is the Davis case and the other is the Sears case. So in Davis, the individual had been declared a habitual offender.
Mm-hmm.
The order had suspended his license, and the order specifically provided his license was revoked for 10 years. It didn't in the order provide that Mr. Davis had to go and reapply and receive a court order in order to get his license back. However, the statute, which was in effect at the time, does require that in order for an individual who's a habitual offender to become relicensed, he has to have a court order. Mr. Davis was stopped after the expiration of his 10 years. He was convicted, and his conviction was overturned because the court said the crime is not the same as the process for reobtaining licensure. The crime is to drive when the order was in effect, and Mr. Davis's order, by its operation, said that he was revoked for 10 years.
So, in your view, one is administratively controlled and the other one is court controlled, and that's where the distinction lies.
So the distinction, correct, the distinction here is in order for Mr. Barden to regain his license, depending on what status he is in, affects the process by which he can regain it. And that includes paying the reinstatement fee. It includes, in some instances, having to retake the test, whatever the steps may be. But the crime under 301 is defined specifically by either the expiration of the suspension or revocation period or reinstatement. And the only way to give meaning to both of those provisions, that those are two distinct things, they're separated by an or in the statute, is that the end of the suspension or revocation is independent and different from reinstatement.
Let's take another little step. Suppose in the context of a reapplication, and I'm going to try to use precise terms because I think it helps us understand what's going on. In the context of a reapplication, suppose it had not been for failure to go down and administratively apply for his license. Suppose it had been, for the sake of argument, not completing the ASAP program. What would his status be at that point?
So it's interesting that the court raises that because there's a statutory provision that addresses this, and that's 4624.11.1. And I think it really highlights this very issue. Under 4624.11.1, an individual who has been suspended for driving under the influence has their license revoked for a year. They thereafter cannot re-engage or reobtain a license until they've completed all the requirements and provided proof that they've completed ASAP. That statute, subsection B, specifically provides any person who drives after the period of suspension has expired and all requirements for reinstatement have been satisfied except completing ASAP is guilty of a violation of section 300, driving without a license, and not 301, driving while their license is suspended. If the court were to adopt the view that an individual has to go and have their license reinstated to be removed from that status under 301, then 411.1 subsection B would make no sense. In fact, it would reward somebody whose license has been revoked but chose not to go to ASAP. They would be guilty of a class 2 misdemeanor for driving without a license, whereas an individual who went to ASAP and successfully completed it but simply didn't reinstate their license would in fact be guilty of a more serious crime. Now, the individual who didn't do ASAP can't have their license reinstated either. And so, in essence, what that statute provides is, in fact, that there is a distinction because all of these statutes all address the same thing, which is there is a termination of suspension and thereafter a reapplication, a reinstatement. All of those things define, all of these statutes talk about the same thing, which is there's a termination of suspension and then a reobtaining of a license. When we look at, for example, section 301, subsection D, which provides an additional penalty for somebody whose license has been suspended once they're convicted, the court is required to resuspend their license. That statute specifically provides that suspension is to occur.
But wouldn't that undermine 462.412, where it says the revocation remains in effect?
It suggests to the court that language has to do with the issue about how somebody goes about reobtaining their license, much like we see the distinction in the habitual offender statute, where 356 says that you remain a habitual offender until two things happen: the 10-year period has lapsed, and you receive a court order allowing you to reinstate your privileges. However, the court in Davis said, since Mr. Davis's order only limited him to a 10-year period and didn't specifically include the language of the needing to have a court order for reinstatement, it wasn't that at the end of 10 years, Mr. Davis now was licensed. He was still a habitual offender. But he wasn't guilty of the criminal act of driving in violation of 356 because 356 applies only so long as the order of the court was in effect.
Which gets back to something that I thought about earlier in this kind of case, and that is where, what you're suggesting is, it's not a criminal violation, but rather a status of some sort that the defendant holds.
Correct. So he remains in the status. As far as the Department of Motor Vehicles is concerned, he remains in the status. He is revoked or he is suspended, and that impacts what fees he pays, what process he goes through to get his license. That status remains. But the criminal statute, and again, as a penal statute, we have to be limited to the language of the statute and its narrow confines. We can only convict somebody for the things that fall clearly within it. And at its very core, the statute distinguishes between the period of revocation or suspension is terminated or the privilege has been reinstated. To give any meaning to that as a distinction requires that there's something different between the termination of a suspension period and the reinstatement. Otherwise, all individuals whose period of suspension has terminated but they haven't reapplied, in essence, they have not been reinstated, that you couldn't have two distinct provisions. We see it again when we look at the language under, I believe it is section 411, subsection C, which talks about this idea that an order of suspension or revocation remains in effect until the person pays a reinstatement fee. The very end of that subsection provides that when 3 years have elapsed from the termination of the order of suspension or revocation, and the person has complied with all other provisions,
except financial responsibility,
can relieve them of the reinstatement fee.
Yeah.
Not just of the SR 22, but actually the reinstatement fee. And so that couldn't happen under the Commonwealth's interpretation of the statute, because we would never get to the termination of the suspension if they don't pay the fee. And so you can never have a period where 3 years after the termination of suspension occurs, we can waive the fee if paying the fee is a condition of the termination. So I'd suggest to the court again, we have to distinguish what is the status, as the court is using it, from what is the crime. In this case, there is no dispute. At the time that Mr. Barden was driving his car, he had paid all of his fines and costs. His periods of revocation had terminated. He simply had not been reinstated. He had no license, and there is no question he was driving with no license. And for that, there is a separate crime. But so long as he's being prosecuted specifically under Section 301, it is the obligation of the Commonwealth to prove that none of these three things have happened. The period of suspension hasn't terminated, his privilege hasn't been reinstated, or he doesn't have a restricted license. In this case, Mr. Barden meets the first of those. The period of suspension or revocation is terminated. And for that reason, the evidence was insufficient.
Thank you, Counsel. We'll save the rest of your time for rebuttal. Ms. Martin?
Good morning, Your Honors, or afternoon, in the case may be.
Yes, ma'am.
May it please the court, Kathleen Martin for the Commonwealth. And the issue in this case is, and where we disagree, is when this period of revocation ended. And it's the Commonwealth's position that it does not end automatically when the time limit expired that was set under
But what would you say to Ms. Hoffman's suggestion that there is clearly a status that can be associated with the defendant and the fact that he is not licensed under 411 or 412, and comparing it to a crime for him not enjoying the status which would allow him to be licensed? What would be your response to that?
Well, I think, Your Honor, we have to look at all of these statutes. And we've got two different statutes. 46.2300 would seem to maybe go more to status. And then we have 46.2301. Well, and that's the one that talks about revocation or suspension. And it seems like because we've got two different statutes that they have separate purposes. And we wouldn't, the General Assembly is supposed to have meaning to everything that it passes. And so I think that simple status may go to 300, but 301 is a different statute. And I think also that while suspension and revocation are terms that appear to be used interchangeably by the courts in the cases and also by the General Assembly in some of these statutes, that they're defined separately in the code and they have separate meanings. And in this particular case, the trial court found specifically that the defendant's license had been revoked. The trial court seemed to agree that if it had merely been suspended, if we were only talking about suspension, that then once he had paid his fines, that might put him in a different category, and that the trial court might have reached a different decision in that instance. But the trial court specifically found that these were different concepts and that this defendant's license was revoked.
It seems to me, and when we read these statutes, we try to make them make sense in application. And it seems to me that if a person goes before a trial court and the trial court sentences him to suspended time and provides certain conditions of him being able to complete his period of revocation and says one of the things that you need to do is complete an ASAP program, and if the individual after the period of revocation, I'm using that term loosely, ends and the person has not completed the ASAP program and is found driving, he's confronted with a lesser offense than if he completes everything except for paying his fines, and he's confronted with a greater offense. How does that make sense? Because it would seem to me that the legislature would be more concerned about the person being educated on his or her responsibilities vis-a-vis driving as opposed to whether or not some financial obligation was met.
Well, you might think that, Your Honor. But I've given this some thought, and I think sometimes, you know, what the legislature does just doesn't always make a lot of sense.
We'll cut the tape at that point.
You know, I've been looking at statutes for a long time, and sometimes there just doesn't seem to be a lot of reason for why something particular got passed the way it did. And I think that 46.2, 411.1, which does talk about this VASAP thing, that maybe that's one of those. And I would say that the language that's used in there is after the license has been suspended. It's specific to the suspension for DUI conviction, and I think we just have to assume that for whatever reason, that particular statute applies to just those circumstances. That's not necessarily the same statute as 46.2411, which is much more general in its application in talking about suspension or revocation. And with regard to 411.C, the Commonwealth's argument is not that this defendant had to pay his reinstatement fee of $30 or whatever it was, but the fact that the importance of that statute is that he had to reapply. The revocation just didn't end automatically. He didn't just get to this time period and then say, okay, well now, you know, I'm not revoked anymore. That he had to go and reapply, that's the purpose of that statute. And once he reapplies, he can pay whatever fee is assessed, or the fee can be waived if that's appropriate to his circumstances. But he still has to reapply. And that's the important thing about the revocation. In the definition of revocation, it is privileges revoked, is not subject to renewal or restoration except through reapplication after the period of revocation has expired. And I'd like to call the court's attention to the Manning case. Which is cited sort of parenthetically in the Commonwealth's brief. But I think that it's important to take a good look at that case. And it was an en banc decision of this court. It was an habitual offender case, but the language of the defendant's order in that case said that he was barred from driving for 10 years or until the privilege to drive was restored by court order. And his conviction for driving as an habitual offender was affirmed. Now, the panel decision in Manning had followed the Davis rationale and had reversed his conviction, but the full court distinguished Davis, saying it had different language in its order, and they said on page 256 of the opinion that the order in Manning, that he was allowed to get a new license after the 10 years, but that fact did not automatically restore his driver's license. And that's what we have here, that even though we have this or language, if we look to the interpretation that was given in Manning by the full court, the revocation does not end automatically. The fact that his revocation period, the time of 1 year, might have expired, but his license had not been restored. And so therefore—
But isn't the language in Manning, though, in the court order, much more broad than the language we have here. As I read that case, the court imposed two requirements. One, administratively, you got to go work it out with the DMV, and you need to come back and see the court for your license to be restored. Here, the court did not seem to do that. It basically set out what is, quite frankly, a traditional sentence, and didn't put that or language in there, obligating the defendant to come back to court and get court approval of his ability to be relicensed.
Well, I think that the language in Manning, it could be said that it is somewhat broader in the order, but I think that it's still important to think that the full court was not, used the fact that it said or, they didn't just say, well, it's 10 years, it's done. You know, they looked at the fact that it was not an automatic restoration. And if you look at 46.412, which the court brought to our attention, that said, the suspension or revocation remains in effect and no license is issued until under the provisions of this chapter, which is chapter 3, and that's 46.2300 versus 506, through that. So I think if you look at all of these statutes, and they have to sort of try to be harmonized, all the statutes as much as we can, that certainly what the court was, what the law is trying to say is that your revocation doesn't just end automatically, that you have to do something, and because this defendant had not gone and done anything to get his license back, he'd paid up, his fines were paid, but he hadn't done anything else, and he was still revoked. That was the status that DMV had on his driver's transcript. And so certainly, if you think about all of those things, the trial court was correct in finding that this defendant had violated 301.
Let me ask you a more difficult question to see what your policy statement would be. Suppose the period of revocation had ended by its term, in other words, the year had expired, and the defendant says, okay, I'm going to go do the prudent thing. I'm going to go down to the DMV, and I'm going to take care of all the things that I have to do. I'm going to get my license, I'm going to reinstate it, and I'm also going to make application pursuant to the prior revocation. I'm going to do all these things. And he goes down to the DMV and he pays the money that he needs to do to satisfy his obligations. Let's assume for the sake of my hypothetical, he's done the alcohol safety program and the things that he needs to do. Goes down to DMV, thinks he's done everything, okay? And let's assume for the sake of my hypothetical, it turns out that the clerk made a mistake and that the reapplication didn't really occur, all right? And so then he's out driving and he's pulled over. What do we have?
I think under those particular facts, that he'd probably have a defense under that Miller case. And that's the one where I think that the defendant asked his probation officer or somebody if he could have some kind of special antique gun. Mm-hmm. And they told him, well, yeah, I think you can, but it turned out that he really couldn't. So, I mean, I think that, I don't know that that really goes to the point that the court was trying to make here, but I mean, I think that in a situation like that, the defendant would have some other recourse in that he has tried to do everything that he was supposed to, and he thought he had done everything he was supposed to, and it's a mistake that's caused by the state agency.
And that's a good answer, and what you're suggesting is there's lack of mens rea. In other words, he thought
right.
that he had done everything he needed to do. Well, I think Ms. Hoffman is going to stand up and say the same thing is here. The defendant lacked mens rea to satisfy the requirements of criminalizing his activities under the enhanced section of liability, that making it a class one misdemeanor as opposed to a class two, and that he was under the view, and I know ignorance of the law is no defense, but he was under the view, I paid everything that I needed to do, and I didn't understand that after that revocation after 1 year meant that I needed to reapply, and so I didn't have the necessary mens rea to violate that statute. I might have been guilty of class two misdemeanor, but if you're going to say that I'm liable under class one misdemeanor, you got to have more than that.
I think the difference here, Your Honor, is that the defendant said that he had talked to DMV and they told him he wasn't suspended because he had paid, mm-hmm. but that didn't really address the revocation. And I think because these are separately defined in the statute, that they are separate concepts, and so he's still revoked. That's just a different animal than the suspension. And so that would be the difference between this situation and the hypothetical that was proffered.
I appreciate that, Counsel.
Right. Thank you.
All right, matter submitted. Ms. Hoffman, you have a little over 2 minutes, ma'am.
Look, I appreciate what the court just
eloquently said for me, but I think what we see
sucking
in this
up
case,
will get you everything.
Got to work with what I've got. In this case, as was described, Mr. Barden did call DMV, and he was told he was not suspended. And again, it goes to that loose language, suspended, revoked, what is he expected to know? But only that he needed to pay a reinstatement fee. And that maintains the same position that he's had, which is, I agree, I didn't have a license, but that doesn't mean that I was committing a crime. In this particular case, and I'd suggest to the court that the language that the Commonwealth has referred to with the Manning case, it really is the language that came out of the Sears case, which talks about the fact that the passage of time doesn't restore the privilege. The unique thing about Sears and the language that's important from there is that the court also said that while Section 356, which defines how you get your license back, defines the period in which a habitual offender may not be issued an operator's license, but it has no bearing on the definition of the offense of driving after being a habitual offender. And the same is true here. The language about the reinstatement process, 411, 412, all have to do with the status and how you get your license back. The crime for driving after your license is suspended requires that you drive before the period has terminated or reinstated.
Let me ask you this, counsel. In this case, and I was going back to the days where I actually did a little district court work, what kind of acknowledgement of suspension or revocation did the defendant sign in this case? I don't think it was in the record, but was there one?
The record is not complete on what that is, but I think the court can draw from the documents that are in there that he is both given a notice that his license is suspended and a notice that if he doesn't pay, that it can be again suspended. None of those talk about the fee. Now, the one thing that is in the court's records are the receipts that he received when he paid his money. And all of them talk about the same thing, which is to have your privileges reinstated, subject to any other applicable suspensions or revocations, present this form with proof that you're legally present in the United States in any DMV office, and comply with all other DMV regulations. And so what he's told is, it doesn't say you are still suspended, it says to get your privilege reinstated, to get it back. And again, it's that gap area. When we look at the definition of revocation, when we look at the definition of suspension, all those processes, reapplication, renewal, all start after the period has expired, which means inherently there has to be an end to a revocation or an end to a suspension before the renewal process. And for purposes of criminal liability, I'd suggest to the court that that places Mr. Barden outside the reach of Section 301.
All right. Thank you. The matter is submitted. We'll come down to Greek Council.